hardworking Ben Fletcher, but but the liners, they're in all caps, and which is probably for the convenience of the person reading them, so you can see them better. But and I don't.
You feel overwhelmed.
It's kind of overwhelming, man. I feel like this sheet of paper is screaming in my face, and so a little bit overwhelming. But to clarify, San Diego State tickets versus Occidental this Friday night. I'm sure you have a full, lengthy scattering report. And then a very furry... Wait. Yes.
Christmas at Sesame Place.
Yes, that's it. Thank you.
Yes,
thanks,
you're welcome.
J-Riff. All right. Our number three, Darren, should be back tomorrow again. He's taking care of some family on the East Coast. So send all of your positive thoughts on Twitter, if you're so inclined.
Spam him.
At Dees Mitchell. He'll be back tomorrow. We'll check in with Stuart Mandel tomorrow. And Ralph Lawler, the former voice of the Clippers, an absolute legend. I might let you call him because I know you would
love
to.
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah, I'm dead serious. He has a book out.
You know, he's the whole reason why I'm a play-by-play broadcaster.
Come on.
I shadowed him in 11th grade.
What?
He and I actually had a Twitter exchange a couple of weeks ago recounting this. But I had to do this whole project about, like, what do you want to be when you grow up?
You're kidding me.
And you had to go reach out to somebody in that industry and you had to shadow them for this project. And to my dad, cold linked in Ralph Lawler, who put me in contact with Clippers PR.
Wow.
And they hooked me up and I got a press pass and I got to shadow him for an entire broadcast. And then he tried to recruit me to his alma mater,
of which, goodness,
the last second I bailed to go to Oregon. So
unbelievable.
I have a deep history with Ralph. That's pretty cool.
That's we'll have to share that story tomorrow when he joins the show. He has a book out. It's called Bingo, 40 Years in the NBA, entertaining memoir from the longtime voice of the Los Angeles Clippers. So that will be tomorrow. The legend himself will join us. And before you go ahead and dial up Jack, I actually want to play this yesterday. This is one of the most impressive things I've seen from an athlete, and that would come from the U.S. men national team captain Tyler Adams yesterday. These pressers have been a little bit contentious for various reasons, but I want you to go ahead and just hear the entire exchange that Tyler Adams had yesterday and the way he presented himself.
First of all, you say you support the Iranian people, but you're pronouncing our country's name wrong. Our country is named Iran, not Iran. Please, once and for all, let's get this clear. Second of all, are you okay to be representing a country that has so much discrimination against black people in its own borders?
My apologies on the mispronunciation of your country. That being said, you know, there's discrimination everywhere you go. You know, one thing that I've learned, especially from living abroad in the past years and having to fit in different cultures and kind of assimilate into different cultures, is that in the U.S. we're continuing to make progress every single day. Like you just educated me now on the pronunciation of your country. So, it's a process. I think as long as you see progress, that's the most important thing.
And I have a huge appreciation for how he handled himself on that answer yesterday. Now, don't forget that Team USA they play on Saturday at 7 o'clock in the morning. I will be up for that. I'm not a diehard soccer fan. I'm not like Darren is, but I appreciate the event. And these have been gripping to watch. It's funny because I've been watching all the World Cup matches, mostly in the studio with no volume on, so I don't even have an appreciation for what the buzz sounds like, but I am into it on Saturday. Now, Jack Cronin, who's going to join us next, had retweeted out from Soccer Insider, he's a soccer writer for the Washington Post, the top rated markets on FS1 for Argentina versus Mexico. And of course, to no surprise, San Diego was number one rated market on FS1 for Argentina versus Mexico. New York, number two. San Francisco Bay Area, number three. West Palm Beach, number four. Washington, D.C. came in five. All right, J-Riff is back. Do we have Jack Cronin down the line? I can't hear you at all. Are you plugged in? You plugged in?
We're all good to go.
Okay, I don't hear Jack. Are you sure?
What's up, Mark?
Oh, what's up? How are you, Jack?
Oh, I'm doing great. Boy, and you're right. How about those numbers?
Oh, that's
for the tournament.
They're not, you know, it's not surprising because I feel like San Diego is always like top three, but this isn't even one for the U.S. match. This is for Argentina versus Mexico. That's phenomenal.
Great call. Yeah, great call. And, you know, whether it's the women's tournament, where San Diego's number one for the final a few years ago, the Women's World Cup, this tournament for the U.S., where we have been number one in the past, we're number four for the U.S. matches here, and now number one for the Mexico-Argentina match, San Diego coming in. It's just a great, it always is that case. And San Diego, by the way, for other sports, does show up for big events, you know, your World Series and NBA Finals and those kind of things. We're in a pretty good time zone for that. But for these, for soccer in particular, this market always, whether it's men's or women's, Mexico, U.S., whatever, it is always among the top markets.
Okay, so you're saying for soccer, that's a no-brainer. So we are also an event city.
Right. That's yes, exactly. Right. We are. There are plenty of people who aren't from San Diego who live here now. It's a great place to be.
Oh yes.
And we, you know, we have, there's a lot of things going on, as they always criticize us for on the sports side, but when the big events happen, your World Cups, your World Series, right, your bigger events, San Diego is always near the top. And that soccer is a great example of that, because the higher you go, the bigger the stage. And for San Diego, we're a great soccer market just in general. So yeah, we're these things all make sense.
Great. Okay. Now, Jack, I did not get a chance to watch really any of the World Cup today. I've been kind of involved on the show and different things. Can you catch us up on what happened today, what we missed, and what it means for the path for the U.S. men's national team?
Excellent question. All right, so what's great about these games, you know, for the U.S. This week, Mexico here today, for example, is that the final group stage games all happen at the same time. So you can't, you know, see, oh, somebody lost, so we don't have to play as hard or whatever. They play the games at the same time. So the final group stage games happen, and there's two windows each day for this particular week. The U.S. yesterday going through and beating Iran in a very charged game, a game they had to win and did so. An incredible match for the U.S. It was kind of the same today, unfortunately, for Mexico, where you had Argentina and Poland playing each other, and Mexico and Saudi Arabia playing each other at the same time. You didn't know what was going to happen. And even though Mexico won that game, goal differential put Poland ahead with Argentina in Group C into the knockout round. And Mexico had this incredible streak of making the round of 16 knockout stage games in the World Cup that unfortunately comes to an end. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they played poorly, but they are in a tough group. Those are two great teams ahead of them, and Poland and Argentina. And so, unfortunately, their streak is over. What it does is it leaves the United States, now that Canada's already been eliminated and Mexico is eliminated today, the U.S. is the only one of the three countries that's going to host here in 3.5 years that's still alive in this tournament. Now, to your point about the knockout round, U.S. on Saturday morning at 7 o'clock our time is going to face Holland. They get the Netherlands 7 a.m. If they win that match, which is possible, it's going to be hard, but it is possible. Netherlands, number 8 team in the world. U.S. is number 16. If they win that match, then it's likely they get Argentina in the round of 8. So that's not a great draw for the U.S. because
that would set a ratings record here, wouldn't it?
I would think so.
U.S. Argentina?
It'd be one of the biggest games ever to be played for the United States of America, to face Argentina and Messi in the quarterfinals, the round of 8. First, got to get through the Netherlands. I realize that. And Argentina has to beat Australia, which, you know, and everything can happen. But Argentina looked great again here today. They left goals on the table today against Poland. Messi missed a penalty kick today. It was at one blocked. So even then, they still won. It's that would be a very tough match to win. I would not favor the U.S. at all in that. But first, they got to beat the Netherlands. But that is the path moving forward for the United States.
Okay, now Jonathan kept me very entertained during his updates because, I mean, it's moot now, but they were nearing an outcome where Mexico would have been tied. They were close to being tied, right, with Poland, and they would have gone to a yellow card differential as a tiebreaker. Could you please could you explain now what happens if they had tied with the yellow cards, though?
All right, so had that happened, which was the case up until Saudi Arabia scored at the very end of that match, there are several series of tiebreakers in these groups of four teams. The first is goal differential, which actually came into play, and so that was how Mexico was eliminated. The next would have been goals scored, And then you move on to a head-to-head matchup, which there was a draw, so they didn't factor in. But then the next tiebreaker would have been number of yellow cards. They call it a fair play or a good sportsmanship award, meaning the team with the lowest number of yellow cards would have actually advanced, and that was in play for quite some time. So Mexico really needed to overcome several things, which unfortunately for them did not happen.
Got it. Got it. Okay, now some good news, I think, for Christian Pulisic. I know I saw the video. That was a really cool video of that team being welcomed back to their hotel yesterday. He has a pelvic contusion. I'm not quite sure what that is. I can't sympathize, but are there any concerns for him playing on Saturday from what you know?
No, it does not appear that way. He posted on social media afterward that he was good to go. It doesn't look like there was a major injury that happened. Pulisic does have an injury history, by the way. He has been a fragile player in the past.
Huh.
So any injury with him is a concern. But this appears to be much more of an uncomfortable injury than anything else. And so it appears he is going to be ready to go on Saturday.
Okay, so for that moment, was that Pulisic's Landon Donovan versus Algeria moment? That's been
absolutely
the comparison. Is that fair?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're 100% right. It was a game. See, this game yesterday for the U.S. was one of the biggest. It wasn't the biggest they'd ever played in, but it was one of them. The games in 94 were huge. They, you know, going on in 2002 when Landon was on the team then. And, of course, you mentioned the game in 2010 where Landon scores at the last possible second. Mm-hmm. And that is a dramatic kind of walk-off win. In this case, it happens in the first half. It's not as dramatic. But given the politics involved, given the fact that they had to win that game in order to advance, and Marty also looking at it through the lens of everything that happens this year here in November and December has implications for 3.5 years from now when the U.S. will be hosting the World Cup in 2026. June of 2026 is when it returns here. I think that's an incredible moment, one that had to happen with the guy who's regarded as the best player on the team, right? Like, it all of those things had to come together. So I do think that is a very, very fair comparison.
I think the politics of the moment, too, has kind of amped things up. What's happening with the protests in Iran, the anger with what the social media account did with their flag. So, yeah, there's been a lot there. And we played this before you came on. That was a remarkable, by the way, the way Tyler Adams handled the question from the Iranian reporter. That was something else, man, for such a young kid.
It was really, yeah, that stuff is unfortunate because you're placing players, like soccer players, coaches, young men in a situation where they have to speak on where the U.S. Navy is placing their ships in the Persian Gulf. Like, this is, I mean, but the World Cup, more than any other sport in the world, I think even more than the Olympics at times, Olympics are pretty similar, but you have, because in this case, in the World Cup stage, the Olympics, you're facing everybody in the world. But in this stage, you are facing one country at a time. And if that country happens to be somebody who is an enemy of ours, because Iran's an enemy of ours,
right?
They are one of our, let's say, top five enemies in this world, and maybe higher than that. Because their media is all state-run, so anybody who's asking a reporter is essentially a spy for the government of that country, right? So in that case, you are facing one country at a time. And he's being asked about all kinds of crazy things, including why the Navy hasn't lifted the embargoes and all these things. So it is really, it's a dangerous, honestly. I mean, there were reports out of Israel and other places warning about potential attacks heading into the World Cup. Very close to Iran, Qatar obviously in right across the way. So there were warnings from the Israelis and others who said to be careful. So you had to be careful security-wise heading into a tournament like this. And so to be asked those kinds of questions, let alone the political stuff, the U.S. supporting women's rights in Iran and all those other things, to be asked that on that kind of stage, I thought Tyler Adams and everybody handled it very, very well, given what had happened. And then they went out and won with that as the background, with the players and their families being threatened in Iran and all these things. So there's a lot of emotions going to that game, even in addition to having to win it to advance in the actual match itself.
On the biggest possible platform. Now, I want to turn over some questions over to Jonathan. But before I do, and this is the one thing I want you to help me explain, because I read it, I see the comments on my timeline. Why is there so much angst against Greg Berhalter?
Well, that's a good question. And by the way, I wonder, Darren may be among those, right?
Yeah.
who feels that way. I don't know. There's always people, and I've been guilty of it myself in the past, right, of blaming perhaps the guy in charge for things that are out of their control a lot of times. We just saw Mexico eliminated. Mexico's a very good team. They're not maybe as good as other Mexican teams in the past, but they're a very good team. They got eliminated from this tournament. The stuff happens. Only two teams in each group can go forward. And by the way, it's going to get a little more tricky when you add in 48 teams for when we host here in the U.S. and Mexico and Canada in 3.5 years. So I personally feel that too much blame is been placed on Greg Berhalter. There was a lot of things that were, you know, around his hiring, nepotism, and a bunch of other things. But I think they've done a good job. I think they have developed. They've been aided, certainly, by the greatest young class of players ever in U.S. men's history. I personally feel like he's had too much criticism, but I've been guilty in the past of criticizing coaches, so who knows? Who knows?
I'm really impressed, Jack, with certain things, my takeaways, I guess, for this opening round of the group stages for the U.S. Obviously, only one goal given up in the three matches, and they played spectacularly defensively against England, I thought. Top to bottom, it really felt like they outplayed England in that match. But the one thing that feels like lacking to me is a finisher, right? Like, you got the midfield is fantastic. It's a bunch of young, really quick creators. And then you have the wings, again, just very, very good at creating opportunities to try and get a shot off, but it doesn't feel like they really have that finisher that might be the next, you know, opportunity to elevate this offense.
That's very well said, and it's true. The U.S., what they call strikers these days number nines, right? So use position numbers. So the U.S. does not have a true number nine to rely upon, a striker, a forward. All of the talent is in the attacking mid and the wings for the U.S. So there's not somebody up there who's sitting there waiting like a Lewandowski or a Messi or any of these players today we saw or Cristiano Ronaldo. There's nobody waiting up top for them to get the ball to and immediately turn and finish. The U.S. doesn't have that. The United States' identity in soccer has always been strong keeping, strong defense, run really, really hard, play hard, but don't quite have the brilliant, magical soccer talent that some of these other countries have, right? A Gareth Bale or a Harry Kane or a Cristiano Ronaldo or a Lionel Messi. Like, they don't have one of those players. Even as good as Pulisic is and all these other guys, Tim Weah, they're not target forward. They're not a forward. They're not a striker. They're not number nine. And so it is going to take to beat Netherlands or to even have a chance against Argentina. They have to play like U.S. soccer, which is play hard, defend well, build up, and create the kind of goals like we saw with Pulisic. It was a brilliant run. If you go back and watch the goal against Iran, it's a build-up from all the way back at the back line through the midfield, McKinney out to Dest, and then over. Pulisic makes an incredible run. Those are the kind of things that are going to have to happen because, to your point, they simply don't have somebody who can sit there at midfield and turn and shoot.
What's the key against Netherlands? I mean, this is a team. We know what Virgil van Dijk is, right? And Dumfries is, and Timber's really. Like, they're big defensively. They have a very active midfield. And then you have the Dutch player of the year, Ngakpo, who's having a great tournament in Memphis Depay, and Berghuis and Bergwijn. Like, you have a really balanced squad in the Netherlands. What's the key for the U.S. to try and get out of this with a win?
First things first is health. You know, we have not seen Gio Reyna at all in this tournament, has not played a single minute. Until stoppage time in one of these tries, that's it. He has not played a valuable minute here in these games. He only came in as one. So we have not seen him at all. And then Pulisic, obviously, Marty mentioned the injury there. I think he's going to be fine. Weston McKennie's not played a full 90 minutes for the U.S. Where are we at with Zimmerman and Dest? And he's got guys who have certainly rotated in the first three. So first is health. Is the best healthy possible lineup for the U.S. available? And then, to your point, you got to go out and play U.S. soccer, which is what we have seen in these first stages, which is not being afraid against England, playing their build-up style of attack like we saw against Iran. That's it. And they can certainly win Saturday. I don't know if they can win twice in a row, especially if Argentina's on the draw, but they certainly can win Saturday. And the other part of this is that people don't, I think, appreciate, and I certainly haven't in my past, is just how fluky and grinding a knockout one-time soccer match is. This is not a home and away aggregate. This is it. One goal can be all of the difference. So that is where the U.S. actually is going to be okay. Maybe some other nations might not look at it that way, but the U.S. might be okay just getting that one and seeing what happens.
Jack, you're the man. Thank you so much for your time. My last question before we let you go. Do you have any theory as to why the, G-Arena hasn't been used?
I mean, it has to be health. It has to be. I don't have a theory. I don't. It has to be health. Is he, I mean, when he is healthy, he's actually maybe the most talented of the players on the roster. Maybe more so than Pulisic. So I don't know. I don't have a theory. He says he's ready to go. He just, there have been other guys who are more fit, as they say in soccer, who have been put out there first. They have been successful so far. So you maybe roll the dice with the same lineup. I don't know. Or maybe they've been saving him to try and get him to a point where he can play.
The secret weapon.
That's right.
The secret weapon right. On Saturday.
That's right. So if it, like, I hope that's the case. We'll see what happens.
Hey, Jack, you're the man. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks,
really appreciate
buddy.
It.
Thanks, J-Rip. All right,
my you. Friend. We'll talk next week. Okay, that was Jack Cronin. When we come back, man, we're going to go ahead and reset the latest news. I found the Kyler Murray stuff's not going to go away. What a disaster. All right, we're going to come back. We're going to start to wrap things up. We're going to hear some more from John Morosi on the latest on the hot stove rumors and the latest on Kyler Murray.